You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. It's time for Food Friday. This week, we're digging into the world of soul food. Our next guest wanted to put a healthier spin on a style of cuisine that meant so much to the generations of family that came before her.
That led her back to some of her family's stories and recipes, honoring traditional, replacing some of the less healthy ingredients. The result is a new book that's not only a collection of recipes, but stories of her family and how food connected them through the generations.
Caroline Randall-Williams is with us now. She's a poet, a cook, and co-author of the new book Soul Food Love, Healthy Recipes Inspired by 100 Years of Cooking in a Black Family. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be with you this afternoon.
Now, you say that there's a truth about soul food that we overlook a lot of the time, that the foods we think of as soul foods aren't really the ones that previous generations of families were actually eating day in and day out. They're more like the celebration foods that have gotten the big marquee attention over time. How did that come to be?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things that happen. You know, if you think about something like fried chicken, which is like one of the first foods that pops in your head when you think of traditional soul food these days, fried chicken is something that takes a long time to cook. You have to be standing at the stove to attend to it the whole time. And a lot of families, you know, coming up in the American South and African-American families and, you know, poor white families as well, they didn't have, they couldn't have always afforded all that extra flour with which to bread the chicken and all of that. So when I'm thinking about, how, you know, things like fried chicken or candied yams, when sugar used to be such a luxury, became what we think of as soul food, I'm thinking about, you know, the rise of the large-scale supermarket, the rise of fast food chains that claim to sell soul food and that kind of thing. And then slowly these sort of delicious, super unhealthy foods started to replace the things that people were using to sustain them day in and day out. You know, in my grandmother and great-grandmother and all the way even back past that in their generations.
So as you say, soul food, what leaps to mind a lot of times is the unhealthier stuff. You're going back into the history there, broadening the definition. What should we think of? What would you like us to think of, Caroline, when we think of soul food?
I love that question. When you think about soul food, what I want you to think about are the sort of elemental ingredients that are at the heart of, you know, because soul food, you know, it has its roots going all the way back to Africa, all the way back to what, you know, enslaved Africans were bringing to the States. So I want you to think of the sweet potato, you know, like a baked sweet potato for breakfast or lunch. I want you to think of greens that have been stewed with lots of spices and peppers. I want you to think about, you know, George Washington Carver, the great black scientist at Tuskegee University, came up with over 300 different things you could do with a peanut. I want you to think about making your own peanut butter. I want you to think about baking fish. You know, one of my favorite stories to tell people when I remind them that fish is maybe the oldest school soul food there is, you know, when you were, say you were working on as a sharecropper in the Jim Crow South, or say you were even all the way back into slavery days, whoever's land you were working on, that man who owned that land, he might know how many cows he had or how many pigs he had or how many chickens he had, but he surely didn't know how many fish were swimming in his ponds and streams. So a fish was something you could catch and feed your family and celebrate healthily, and in the privacy of your own home, in the dark, in secret, in a way that was that kept you out of danger but kept your body sustained. So again, sweet potatoes, peanuts, fish, greens, the old school foods.
Now, this book was kind of a family affair for you in lots of ways. You wrote it with your mom, first of all, and then you looked back at generations of women, mostly, but some men, too, in your families who cooked and how they cooked, what they cooked. What did you find? What did you take away from that history?
Well, my mom and I like to say that essentially the book is a, you know, it's a series of love letters. It's love letters looking to the past, as love letters to my two great-grandmothers, Dear and Alberta, and to my grandmother, Joan, and a love letter, and my mother has written essentially a love letter to me in her section of the memoir. And then the recipes, even more importantly, are my love letter to my mom, because, you know, in writing the cookbook and coming up with these recipes, what I've done is I've said, you know, I respect where we've been and who I come from, and I want to preserve the integrity of, you know, your of the, these women's beautiful desire to feed the bodies of their families and, you know, make beautiful homes. And I want to keep that spirit alive, but I want to do it in a way that's good for our bodies as well as our souls. And I really, it's an incredible legacy. And writing these memoirs, I've learned so much about my family. I love that you said the men, there are a few men in there too, because Papa, my great-grandfather, he did not like the idea of his wife raising a finger in her kitchen because his mother had actually been a young woman who worked in the kitchen of his father's house. So she was a young black woman. His father was a white man in Selma, Alabama. And so he, having seen his mother work in a kitchen in a way that was really hard for him, he never wanted his black wife to have to do that. So he instead just cooked everything and then let her claim that she cooked it. I think that's a pretty amazing precedent to set as a man who also ran his own business. But it's just those little odds and ends of wonderful family history that, you know, the more I talk about the book out in the world, the more other people hear those stories, they resonate, and I hear all these other family stories told back to me. So it's been an incredible community building experience too.
It's Food Friday. We're talking with Caroline Randall Williams, co-author of Soul Food Love. She's putting a healthier spin on what we think of as soul food. And Caroline, you've mentioned already, you're trying to make a healthier take on soul food. Another thing I love about the cookbook is you're trying to make it with readily available ingredients. If all you have is a, you know, department store with a grocery section in it, you can still find the ingredients here. Why was that important to you?
Oh, God, because I think one of the biggest crises in this country in terms of the, you know, the obesity epidemic and all of that is the fact that a lot of people that are struggling with their weight are struggling because they live in food deserts. And I think that there are so many cookbooks where the sort of subtext is, but if you can't shop organically and you can't, you know, farm fresh all of this and you know, grass-fed all of that, then you might as well not bother. And I really think that it's slow and steady wins the race. We like to say the struggle is real, but the joy is too. So I want people to feel like they can go into any food place that they have access to and make something that's delicious and good for them and not feel defeated before they even walk into the grocery store.
Well, let's get into some of the recipes now. Greens are a staple of soul food, and a whole lot of things are versatile. What do you like to do with greens? It's a simple treatment that's going to taste good.
Well, in my book, I have a recipe that calls for a mess of greens, and I don't stipulate explicitly. You know, I do in my recipe. I say, you know, a mix of all of these, but I really encourage people when they come to my book to sort of riff on it however they'd like, you know, sort of like a jazz approach to my recipes, in the sense that I want people, my grandmother's best friend, who's still alive and who I see often, Gobami Lee, she'll see some dandelion greens and just snatch them up and throw them in the pot with the mustards and the collards and the kale, because all of these greens have wonderful complex flavors and they really are fun when you put them all together. And I like to make my greens, instead of using fat back or traditional, you know, cuts of meat to flavor the greens, I love to make them spicy. I love to throw in hot sauce. I love to throw in chopped up peppers. I encourage people to roast their peppers before they put them in the greens to get a nice smoky flavor in them. So there's so many ways to add layers of flavor that are not adding calories.
Did I see apple cider vinegar in one of the greens recipes to help?
Absolutely,
boost that flavor?
Absolutely. In my mess of greens, there's the apple cider vinegar, which I think it adds a bite that is so welcome. And greens are a wonderful side dish to like a roasted chicken, and if you have that sort of the bite and the spice of the apple cider vinegar and the hot sauce together with some healthy protein, that becomes a really, really cheerful, tasty, healthy plate.
Does soul food have, I don't know, a particular flavor profile that we can think of when we're putting it together, given that some of it sounds like experimentation and going with what you come across, like those dandelion greens, but do you think of it as having heat and a bite? Is that part of soul food?
I think that certainly in my experience, and I have on my father's side some Louisiana roots, And also, obviously, you know, there's a strong tradition of, like, hot pepper soup and the utilizing of hot peppers in African cooking, too. So I think absolutely heat, any warm spices, you know, cinnamon, nutmeg, that kind of thing. But I also think, and I think that, you know, the flavor of the yam and the sweet potato is essential. The flavor of, you know, of the skin on a well-roasted chicken, all of those things and the aromas of a house where, you know, something's going on in the kitchen, so to speak. But I also think that as much as I say that on the one hand, I also think that I love the idea that soul food is an evolving food in the same way that what it means to be, you know, an American and a Black American is an evolving existence. You know, and the more wonderful and hybrid our culture becomes, the more wonderful and hybrid I, like, invite the food to be.
We're talking right now with Caroline Randall-Williams about the world of soul food and her quest to put a healthier spin on the cuisine. Her new book is Soul Food Love. We'd like to hear from you, too, at 800-642-1234.
Do you make soul food? And what are some of your go-to recipes, your favorite dishes? And what do you do, if anything, to try to make them that little bit healthier for your family? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation and check out a recipe we have on the Facebook page, a chicken peanut stew, coming up after a look at the news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Caroline Randall-Williams, the author of Soul Food Love. And we want to hear from you on this. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you make soul food in your home? Do you have a favorite recipe? And do you try to make it healthy? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Go right to a caller. We've got Boyd on the line in Wautoma. Boyd, hi.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Veronica. It's been a long time since I've called in. Good to hear from you guys. You know, I listen to what your guest says, and, you know, she's really spot on when it comes to soul food, because the stereotype, and I really mean that to the highest degree, we think of as, you know, whether it's, you know, fried chicken and stuff that, you know, is not even, you know, supposed to be healthy. And when you really explore soul food, it isn't that way at all. One book that I have, it's a gentleman out of Oakland, California, called Soul Food Vegan, and he has a lot of the same recipes that the guest talks about. And, you know, some of the things that I like cooking, you know, she mentioned sweet potato. It's taken me a while to get used to sweet potato, but, you know, one thing I would make is a sweet potato hash brown where you just, you know, you dice it up and then use applesauce to keep it together, and you can, you know, fry it, you know, and grapeseed oil, and that's a really good one. And with April coming around, collard greens, you know, you can cook them in so many ways, and they're healthy, and like I said, with April, they're going to be in season. And I also like African peanut soup. I mean, it's to die for.
Boyd, thank you so much. Getting me hungry, hungrier than I was already. Caroline, you know, you don't avoid meat in the book, but there are a number of vegetable options in your book, aren't there?
Absolutely. And I think that was something that came very naturally. It's sort of, when we were putting the book together, I said, gosh, I look like a vegan or some sort of vegetarian somebody or other, and I really don't have my own personal food restrictions, but, you know, when you're really trying to get back to the basics, it is a lot of vegetables. There's a lot of love that comes from things that grow out of the ground, you know? And I thought that was really fun, and it also, very happily, is very authentic to the roots of the foodways.
I want to talk about that recipe that you shared with us, that peanut chicken stew. Can you talk a little bit about what goes into it and how it comes together?
Well, I think it might be my absolute favorite recipe from the book. And it has as its base a recipe that my mother and I came up with together. I came up with it to help my mother in a moment of crisis when we have a sweet potato broth, which is essentially one sweet potato, a bunch of celery, a carrot, an onion, olive oil, and some cloves, and you sort of you cook it all up together until the sweet potatoes go soft, and then you blend it into what we like to call a open quotation marks, broth, close quotation marks. And it's a wonderful, really flavorful base. I tend to keep a bunch of it frozen in my freezer at any given time so I can throw soup together. And then it's just delicious. You know, you throw in your chicken breast meat and you throw in some tomatoes, and it just has this, and you put in peanut butter, and I like to home make my peanut butter, which a lot of people don't even know that they can do, but it's easier and cheaper than using the store-bought kind. So I throw in my homemade peanut butter, and the soup is really very easy to assemble, and with all of the spices, and you put in your cayenne and your you put in the cayenne and the cinnamon and all the different, you know, all of the fabulous flavors together, and it's just a beautiful soup, and it's a delicious soup, and it's I was joking with one of my friends the other day that she was surprised I still love it so much, because I'm a full-time graduate student as well, and I made a giant pot of it for myself during finals week this winter, and I ate it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for, I think, 5 or 6 days. But I never got tired of it because it's that delicious.
This sounds fantastic, and I want I think that's going to be a weekend project to do that broth. I think I still have potato that needs something being done with it. Back to our callers. Boyd, by the way, thanks for the call. We'll go to Lynn in Coloma now. Lynn, hi.
Hi, I'm Scots-Irish, and this is very interesting to me because, well, we were sent to penal colonies in Georgia, and that's where my family came from. But I think there's a lot of similarities in her cooking to my family's cooking, because we eat greens, we use fatback, we use bacon, we use all this stuff in our cooking, and I think, you know, she could have another cookbook.
Lynn, thank you so much. And Caroline, you mentioned, I think on the air, or at least in your book, that this is not just black people in the South. This is poor white people in the South had similar cuisines.
Oh, absolutely. And I love, you know, my great-grandmother, Alberta Bonton, who we talk about, she's grandma in the cookbook. She was born in Waycross, Georgia. And her father was a white man of Irish descent, incidentally, and her mother was a young woman who worked for his family, and because obviously there's some complicated history there, but there's tons of overlap in the food, of course. And, you know, soul food, American Southern food, is a hybrid food. It's got French influence from the, you know, the Louisiana. It's got African influence. It's definitely got Irish and English influence as well. And I think that, you know, a lot of the economic struggles and the resource were a lot of the economic struggles were shared between poor white people and poor black people, and a lot of the resources that they did and didn't have were similar. So I think that that's absolutely true, and I love the idea of and hope very much to have a second cookbook, and I would love to explore, you know, that those intersections more.
We're talking about healthy soul food right now with our guest, Caroline Randall-Williams, who wrote the book Soul Food Love with her mom, Alice Randall. And let's talk a little bit about dessert before we have to let you go. You've got some beautiful-looking desserts in there, meringues, and something especially intriguing. You call it chocolate communion. Tell us about that one.
Chocolate communion is, it's the easiest and by far the most fun dessert. We, you know, down here in the South, you can find church stores, you know, in any southern town, and so we go to the church store and we buy a big old stack of communion cups, and then we put bourbon in our little bitty communion cups, and then we'll go and get just several bars of delicious dark chocolate. We like here in Nashville the locally made Olive and Sinclair dark chocolate, and we just break up little pieces of dark chocolate and serve them with little communion pieces or communion cups of bourbon. So it's a little bit of the, you know, in communion you have the body and the blood, and in chocolate communion you have the chocolate and the bourbon, which is almost like a secular secular spiritual experience here in the South. And we like it because it's a little bit of a kick and something delicious, but, you know, dark chocolate has health benefits, and a little bit of bourbon, I think, is good for your soul, and a communion cup size can't do too much harm.
Caroline, do the people at the church store know what you're doing with those communion cups?
What is it? He without sin cast the first stone.
Oh, it sounds like they've been put to good use in your family with a lot of love,
yeah.
That's for sure. Well, before we let you go, any other favorites that you want to leave us with? Something you think we should try at home, maybe?
Oh, well, I would send you, since we're ending on desserts, I'd send you to the crepe stack, which I love because, you know, I was raised with these beautiful, elaborate, you know, my great-grandmother made these gorgeous cakes, and my mother would make me a strawberry cake for my birthday with all these layers. And a crepe stack is, you know, a crepe has tablespoons of flour instead of cups of flour, and then we just layer it like a crepe, and then strawberries, and then the minty yogurt sauce, and then another crepe and strawberries, and you wind up with this beautiful, vibrantly colored stack that you can put on a cake dish and serve, you know, with a lot of ceremony, and it's very beautiful, but it's a very small fraction of the calories of a big cake. And it seems extra special because people don't see things like that as often anymore. So
fantastic.
I would encourage people to try a crepe stack instead of a cake next time they want to bring something fun to a celebration.
Caroline, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. This has been a blast.
That's Caroline Randall-Williams. She's the co-author of Soul Food Love.